evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to all. My name is Debbie, and I am an alcoholic. Our faith tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery speakers in the Western Hemisphere so that they can share their experience, drink, and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of November 27, 2002. She has been in service in such positions as Secretary, GSR, Treasurer, Area Service Rep. She's been involved in activities as well as sponsor. When I asked her what her AA motto is, she said, "We don't drink no matter what, and no matter what, we don't drink." May I have the envelope, please? You know, I just need to say that it's a real privilege to be part of this group, but our speaker tonight I've known for many, many years, and it is an honor to be able to introduce her. So, with having said that, the winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week award is Tammy T. from Fresno.
Bless your heart. Oh, my. Thank you. Oh, I'm Tammy. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for having me. Wow, what a wonderful meeting. Very fancy. Thank you, Bill, for having me out. You've been a gracious host, and you've set a really great example of this meeting and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to appreciate that. And I want to say happy birthday to Jim and Abraham. I see a lot of familiar faces and old friends and a lot of young people, and this is a really big meeting, so I know that Alcoholics Anonymous is working. And I am from Fresno originally, from Visalia originally. I grew up here, and the meetings were not this big when I was here, and there wasn't a lot of young people, and I got sober when I was really young. So this is really hopeful and really exciting for me to be here. I want to tell you that I'm no authority on anything, and that everything that I'm going to tell you, I've been taught by you people and by my predecessors, and that this is just merely my experience. If you want to learn how to stay sober, then you read the book and you work the steps with a sponsor and you go to meetings, and that's just the deal. Wow, what a fancy meeting. This is too cool. It's really, really neat to be here. I have had a very, very interesting year, a very, very interesting week, and an even more awesome day. And I think I'm just going to start off by telling you that being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous has afforded me the ability to be functional in society enough to go back to college and pursue a education in registered nursing. It's been a really, really long journey. It's been a long road. It's been a lot of no matter what. And this morning at 7 o'clock, I took my very last exam of the registered nursing program and passed, and I'll be graduating on Friday. Thank you. And so this is where you find me on days like that in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. People that go to meetings regularly stay sober. And it's a big deal for me today, and nobody's been able to wipe this smile off my face. So I'm super, super grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and to the people that have like walked me through that, because if they only knew who I really was, they wouldn't have even let me in the door, right? So it's been a big deal for me today and this week, and it's been a very, very difficult year. I celebrated 10 years sober last month, and thank you. And this has been the hardest year of my sobriety so far. And so I'm telling you that because after 10 years, walking through the hardest year of my sobriety so far, I found myself in more meetings this year and hanging on the coattails of my people and you more than any other year. And I also felt like a newcomer more this year than any other year of my sobriety, and that's okay, you know. I was in a relationship for 90% of my sobriety, and that relationship was a big deal for me in my life, and I was very committed to it, and it was loyal and respectful and monogamous, and both of us were members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we trudged this road together for a very, very long time until God tossed it for us not to do that anymore. And April this year we separated, and I moved out and I lost my home. And then I also, when I got sober 10 years ago, I got a little dog. Her name's Montana, and she saved my life when I got here. I was severely, severely depressed and anxiety ridden and in fear, and I couldn't get out of bed, and that little dog was 2 months old, and if it wasn't for me having to get up out of bed and take her outside to go to the bathroom and feed her, I wouldn't have gotten out of bed. And she was my saving grace, and I kept her for 10 years. In August of this year, she was ran over right in front of me. And through all that, I had to take my last semester of the nursing program off, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to graduate. I then had to move for a second time, and then I got my dream job through all this, and then I lost it this year, the one that a million girls would kill to have. So all of those things, the first thing that I did was I went to a meeting, and the next thing that I did was I got myself a sponsee, and it was, it literally carried me through, you know. My friends and my family and my support group in Alcoholics Anonymous literally, like, put on fire retardant boots and walked through the pits of hell with me in emotional places that I had never been before, and in ways that, you know, the no matter what. There's been a lot of no matter what's this year for me alone, and this is what we do. We don't drink no matter what, and no matter what we don't drink, and we say yes to service, and we reach out our hand to newcomers, and we work steps, and we work with other alcoholics, and we suit up and we show up, and we feel our feelings, and we cry, and we laugh, and we walk, and we breathe, and we move, and we keep doing the deal, and we hit our knees, you know. So I found myself on my knees a lot this year, and I found myself in a lot of meetings among you, and I'm so grateful that I have a fellowship. I'm so grateful that, you know, I feel safe here, and I feel like I'm home here, and I feel like you are my people, and that you get me, and that you understand me in a way that, you know, the rest of the world doesn't. And so that being said, that's a testimony to Alcoholics Anonymous and what you have taught me on how to walk through this deal and how to do this deal one day at a time and to not drink no matter what. So, you know, I grew up here, and my story is a little bit different than other people's in the sense that I was an AA baby. I grew up in the rooms, and my mother was an alcoholic in recovery, and my father is an alcoholic in recovery. And so I was the little 9-year-old girl in the back of the room coloring, you know, at meetings, and a lot of people know me from when I was 9 years old. These people that are shaking their heads right here have watched me grow up from yay high. And so I followed in my mother's footsteps, and you know, when I took my first drink, I knew that it was on, and I knew that I felt like I was on a train that was never going to be able to move fast enough, and it never did. I was never able to keep my alcoholism at bay and make it look good. I really, really tried to, because I just wanted to be cool and easygoing and like this, like, pot smoking, drinking hippie, and like everything was all good. You know, I really wanted my disease to manifest that way, and I wanted to have fun, and I wanted to be normal, and I wanted to do what the other kids were doing. And I was lonely and young, and I think it was a level of peer pressure and, you know, high school and all that stuff that went along with my disease. But from the very beginning, I knew from what I had learned in here and from what I had seen in my home that there was going to be a seat saved here for me. And there certainly was. And my alcoholism developed extremely rapidly. And by 15, I was in my first rehab, and I was kicked out of my first school. And kicked out of my home and on the streets. And completely powerless. And my disease continued like that from the beginning. And, you know, like I said, there were intermittent periods of time in my adolescence that I would stop drinking, and the rehabs would work for a minute. And I think that I was too young, and I think that I was just young, you know, and I was just bored, and I was lonely, and I felt very insecure and disconnected and out of place. And it was difficult, and I was an only child, and I grew up in a home with alcoholism, you know, defects. And, you know, growing up as a child, I was always very, very loved by my mother, and she was suffered from her own disease. And I know now, looking back through my step work and through my processes, I realized that she did the very best that she could and that she knew how to do. And people back then didn't stop and say, should I have a child? Because maybe I'm not ready to have a child. They just had kids. That's just what they did. And, you know, I would say, maybe you should have, you might have, you know, wanted to rethink that, you know. But I was always safe and loved. And I was never sexually abused. I was never physically abused. And I think I relate that just entirely to God's grace. So as her disease manifested over the years, she finally found you in when I was 9. And that's when our journey began with recovery. And God bless her and my father. They had to put up with a lot from me. I was completely out of control, and self-will run riot. And I was a difficult child to handle. I was a difficult teenager to handle. And my level of alcoholism was completely unmanageable. So I've done a lot of work. It used to be a lot of blaming and a lot of anger and a lot of your fault. And it's turned into empathy, compassion, love, and understanding as a result of, you know, working the steps. So a series of rehabs, a series of getting kicked out, a series of, you know, going to Christian programs, the mental health psych ward in Fresno for trying to commit suicide, severe anxiety attacks, depression, you know, living on the streets. I ended up in Indio, California, kicked out of a rehab, on the streets, on the railroad tracks, in the mission, doing whatever it took to get the next drink. And it was hard, and it was sad, and it was ugly, and it was scary, and it was where my disease needed to take me. And what it did was it proved to me my level of powerlessness over this disease. And step one for me is the most important step. It has been paramount throughout my sobriety, and it's been the one step that has kept me here, and it's the one step that will not let you stay here if you don't understand it completely. You know, my level of powerlessness was at the end there. I was not going to drink. I just wasn't. I was not going to go to the bar that night. I was not going to buy a bottle. With every ounce of me and every fiber in me and all the human willpower that I could muster, I was not going to drink that day. And every single day I ended up at the bar at last call, puking outside my window, to the point that I realized that I could not control this disease and that I was completely powerless to stop it. And this was after several attempts and introductions to meetings and steps and recovery homes and this process, you know. And so I surrendered. And, you know, and I relapsed a lot in the beginning. And they served their purpose. And I've been talking to a lot of people about that lately in my life who have relapsed, because my sponsees, you know, they served their purpose. They did for me. It brought me to a new level of powerlessness. It brought me to a new level of understanding of what this disease is, what it can do to my life, and just the idea that I can't and he can. You know, I am of my own human power. incapable of controlling this disease on any level. And I know that. And so understanding that deep level of powerlessness for me means that I know if I drink, then everything goes on the bar. I know that if I drink, that I do have that physical allergy, and I know that it's going to be set off, and it's going to be off and running, and I am able, I have enough sense to play the tape through and know the truth about my disease, and that there's no more excuses, and that I cannot lie to myself anymore. You know, so the lie that I can control this, I can drink like other people, I can have a good time, I can have a glass of wine, I can do it socially, it's not that bad, that lie is dead because of where my disease took me over and over and over again. And I'm so grateful for that because it really keeps me here. And step one for me, powerlessness is across the board paramount in my life in every area. I am powerless over people, places, and things, most situations. And understanding that level of powerlessness really does help me step back and let go and let God do his work. You know, step two has also been really, really important. And, you know, I'll get to that later. It's just kind of manifested itself into a lot of 11th step work over the years. You know, in the beginning, it was important for me to get on my knees and to tell my higher power what I needed to tell him through step two. And step three also every day. And continues to be every day in every situation. Steps one, two, and three, I work on a regular basis because I have to, because you've taught me that, and because I have learned, and my mind has been trained, and my thought process has been changed to do that automatically. It doesn't always happen. Self-will gets in the way. Emotions, my humanness, character defects, those things crop up. But I know that if I practice the spiritual principles of step one, two, and three, that I'll get relief. And most of the time, my resistance to that is what causes me so much pain and so much tension. So knowing that has really helped me, you know, get through a lot of things that I have no control over, that I have no power over, like the ending of a relationship, the loss of a dream job, the loss of a dog, the loss of a home, the loss of a family member, you know, the things that are not of my control and of my power. So step four in the beginning was huge, and started from the beginning all the way up until that present day, writing and cleaning house and getting really honest, and it wasn't really that big of a deal. And I've done many since I've been here. I'm on one right now. It's just what we do. It's what we have to do if we want to stay here. And there was a lot of time, you know, I stayed here for like 2 years in the beginning, and 9 months of the last 2 years was sitting on a fourth step that never got turned into a fifth step. And I relapsed behind it. So we have to keep working. We can't stay idle because self-will will crop up. And so step five was, you know, is kind of, you know, is something that I do all the time. You know, if something comes up in my life, if something is going on with me, I just tell another person, you know, and I tell my sponsor, and I talk about it in a meeting, and I get honest about those things that are secrets, that are dark, that are of, you know, our lower self. You know, I don't keep any of that stuff. I've learned how to become very flexible and kind of fluid as a stream here, and let it come in and let it come out, because I don't hold on to anything that is mine and mine alone. You know, it's going to eat me up if I don't get it out. And so I've always just been very, very open, probably to a fault at times, you know, with normies and the rest of the world. You know, they don't get it, you know. Step six for me has been really where the meat and potatoes is, and my character defects have not been removed from me. They crop up in a lot of situations that I'm emotionally attached to, that I have a lot of attachment in the result, and I have a lot of fear. But again, it's just about, they're removed as far as I'm going to let them be removed with my higher power's help. And if I transfer my thoughts to a conscious contact with a higher power through whatever character defect is manifesting in me or harming someone else, then I have a better chance to not have to end up at a ninth step with the person, you know. And I can give myself a lot of relief. There's a lot of freedom here, there's a lot of relief here, and there's a lot of peace here if we can connect a lot sooner to, you know, to a conscious contact with our higher power. And that's been developing for me over years, and it's changed in a lot of ways. So, you know, as far as character defects go, absolutely. I've got a ton of them, and if you follow me around, you'll see them, and you'll find holes in my stories, in my story, and I'm not perfect. I'm a human being here, and I'm doing the best I can with what I have to work with, and I'm not perfect by any means, but I do have the tools today to, you know, to give myself a little bit more freedom, if I choose to. It's all, it's a choice. There are people that stay here that are very miserable and sad and unhappy, and they've carried a lot of weight, and they carry a lot of baggage, and they create a lot of chaos and drama because they aren't willing to like kill the self and the selfishness and get honest and talk about that stuff, you know. So I've always tried to stay small, you know, as small as I can here. You know, I naturally have a big ego, a big mouth, you know. I'm a bit flamboyant. I'm strong-willed. I have a voice, and so those things, as naturally as personality traits for me, have got to be put in check by a higher power on a daily basis. So my focus has got to be staying small here, being humble, and most of the time I'm humbled by life situations and things that are thrown up at me like they were this year. That stuff, you know, it's so great when I get the opportunity to humble myself before I act out. But, you know, keep coming back, right? So, you know, and step seven is the same thing. I continue to pray for those character defects to be removed from me. And what happens through that process is that they become really big and they're everywhere. And when I find something that's causing me harm and pain and that I don't like, it's not working for me anymore, I pray about it and it becomes the only thing there is. And it's awful for a minute because it's huge. And so, you know, that's just part of the process. And then it becomes a little bit easier for me to see it before it starts to happen, you know. And then, you know, the next phase of that process is that I'm able to stop and not react on it a little bit easier and a little bit faster the next time. So that's just been an ongoing process. And there are some things that have gone on in my life in the beginning of my sobriety that no longer exist for me today as a result of working the steps. And there are things that have manifested today that I did not even know what they were when I first got here, and now I'm dealing with those. It's just a constant process. This is the process. And I'm constantly on this wheel, like a hamster, you know. And so things come up, but it's always the same solution. The solution never changes. The truth never changes. It's always been one way for me, and it's always worked if I choose to let it. And, you know, the faster I can cut out excuses and cut out, you know, poor me self-pity, you know, morbid reflection, and, you know, I'm a big piece of crap, and it's your fault, not mine, and don't they know who I am, all that kind of stuff, you know, it causes me to be sick, and it causes harm to myself and others. And so the more that I can just stop that stuff and get on my knees, the better off I'm going to be. And that's been my process here, is kind of learning how to go back and forth from that and try to get there faster and sooner each time, you know. So step eight, my list. I've had a list since I've been here. I have created new lists. I have a list right now. Part of the process. And, you know, step nine, I've made a living amends for, you know, a lot of people don't know how to make an amends for the things that they've done, and I get that. And a lot of it just has to do with staying here. You know, you're making an amends by being here and by not drinking, by not driving, by not causing your family harm, and not being a source of stress and chaos and pain and drama. You know, just the fact that you're not ingesting alcohol every day and killing yourself is a huge amends to society and your family and your friends. And the other stuff kind of, you know, comes along with the help of a sponsor. You know, financial amends. I got a lot of financial amends. You know, I'm financially sick. I have not applied spiritual principles in the area of my finances. I'm sure that if I do, it would work. If I was willing enough to apply spiritual principles in the area of my finances, I would probably be very successful. I know that. Just today, I'm not willing to do that right now. You know, and that's just where I'm at. But I do have people call me and tell me that, you know, how do I make amends for all the things I stole? And I tell them, well, you go and you buy products from that store and you give them away. You know, simple things like that that will make you feel a little bit better. And it's just little things like that that other people have taught me, that I've done, that create self-esteem. You know, when we get here, we're so broken and we hate ourselves. And for me, that's been a process. It's been a major process for me coming to love myself, even after 10 years. And so, you know, coming here with all that pain and all that emotional baggage, we have got to do things that feed our self-esteem, you know. And I know that, you know, what relates to that for me is that, you know, we do esteemable things. That's what we do. We do things that give us self-esteem, and we become trustworthy, and people trust us because we're trustworthy. It's just what we do, and it becomes automatic. And there was a level of, you know, not trusting myself when I was here for a very long time. I didn't trust myself in any situation. I didn't know if I was going to cheat on you, steal from you, not show up. I didn't know what I was capable of because this disease was so big in me, and there was a level of not having the recovery yet, you know, not having a foundation. And so through the process, I've grown and I've learned that I trust myself today. I know what I'm going to do in any situation most of the time, you know, most of the time. I've had some crazy stuff thrown my way, and what has happened is it's like this insurance. You just put it in the bank and put it in the bank. All these meetings and the sponsorship and the step work and the working with other alcoholics, I just put it in the bank, and I think, you know, something, you know, shit's going to hit the fan, and what are you going to do? Well, this is what I would do if this happened, and then it happened, and what's happened for me is that I draw from the bank, and I get my ass to a meeting, and it becomes automatic. This is automatic for me, and it saved me a world of hurt and pain and destruction in my life that very well would have been there had I not relied on you people, you know. So, step nine has been a long process. It's been a living amends. I've had a couple of scenarios where it didn't go my way, and it was painful, and it was a shot to the gut, and it wasn't what I expected, but they're, you know, expectations. It's not about me. It's about being willing to take this process no matter how it feels, and being willing to do what it takes to stay sober no matter how it feels. And that's what I do every day. I do what I do every day despite how I feel. I get up, I go to meetings, I don't put anything in my body. I do the best I can to reach out to other alcoholics despite how I feel. And what that's given me is 10 years of sobriety. At least, you know what I mean? That's the least that I've gotten here. It's been 10 years of sobriety. So step nine is big and scary. And there are some things in step nine that I'm working with with a sponsee that I don't know how to handle, you know. I've never been faced with this type of an amends before, and I had to draw from, you know, my predecessors and my sponsor. And right now, the process that we're in on that is prayer. And, you know, sometimes when I don't know what to do, I just pray. And when I don't have the answer, I just pray. And I trust God, and I leave the results up to Him. And that is 90% of my life, because I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'm just a little girl who's trying to grow up here still, and I've continued to keep a conscious contact with a higher power and trust Him. In the beginning, I was on my knees constantly telling God, I trust you. I trust you. I trust you. I trust you. I don't know why. I don't know how. And I don't even know if I do, but I trust you. And I continued to say that, and I acted as this, and I did the next indicated thing, and I did what people told me to do here. And I've been able to build from there. You know, step 10 has been huge for me. And a lot of it can be kind of self-centered. Like, if I do something to hurt you, I immediately want to make an amends. Of course I do, because I want to make myself feel better, and I want to fix it, and I don't want to live with my own guilt and my own shame of whatever I've done to cause you harm. So sometimes that is selfish and self-centered, and I've had that come up in a real serious relationship with of a girlfriend of mine, where I had to sit and wait and feel the feelings surrounding the amends until it was time to make the amends after I processed through a 10-step inventory. So sometimes we just have to sit and feel. And that's been major for me here. This deal for me summed up in one comment would be feeling our feelings. This is not a place for the meek and weary. This is where the big boys live. I'm telling you, I've seen people walk through things that I can't imagine what I would do if I had to walk through them. And I've walked beside them, and they've walked beside me, and they've felt everything that they've had to feel raw and intensely. And it's been painful. And we cry here with each other, and we laugh here with each other, and we go to graduations, and we go to divorces, and we go to funerals, and we go to weddings, and we go to babies, and we do, we have have all these things, life happens here, but through the whole process, we're expected to feel our feelings. And that's been the biggest thing for me, because I'm super emotional. I'm a woman, I'm an alcoholic, you know, and I'm an only child, and I'm a Leo, and I'm emotional, you know what I mean? And I wear it on my sleeve. And so I've had to learn how to manage that over the years and not throw up on everybody, you know? I've had to learn how to manage my emotions here and feel my feelings no matter what and not drink. And it's a humbling experience, especially this year, sitting in meetings, just crying and chilling my ass and not saving my face, you know? Because I want to look good and I want to sound good and I want to have a lot of recovery and I want to help all the girls and I want to be an AA poster child. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a member among members. I'm one among many. And we all get our day in the sun here. But at the end of the day, I am humbled by the feelings that I feel here, the processes that I've gone through here, the people, the friendships. It's been amazing. Step 11 is huge for me. It is the foundation of my recovery, and it's taken many forms. I've connected with a higher power on many, many different levels, and that relationship has changed, and it's just like a relationship that I would have with a sponsor or a friend or a husband or anyone else. It has to be watered, and the seed has to be planted, and I have to spend time with him, and I have to, we have to sit in the sun and grow, and we have to walk together and talk together, and we have to spend time with each other, and we have to invest in each other, and we have to trust each other, and we have to show up for each other. Just like in any relationship that I want any kind of substance in, I've had to do that with my higher power, and it's been a beautiful process and a beautiful experience, and I've had miracles happen to me. I can sit up here, there's not enough time for me to tell you the miracles that have happened to me, where it's just absolutely unexplainable that that happened. There's no way in the world that that could have happened, and it happened as a result of my faith in a higher power. And prayer is the most important thing. I pray all through the day, and when I feel like things are too big for me, which I do most of the time, I connect to my higher power. You know, I've done, you know, that I'm quick to see where religious people are right, because the book has told me to do that. You won't find me in church on Sunday most of the time, but I love Jesus as much as the next guy. But I have formulated a relationship that is very sacred to me here, and it's grown. You know, I've done a work in A Course in Miracles, you know, and yoga, and you know, lots of different things, because if you stay here, you're going to have to grow in that area. You know, that relationship, like anything else, has had to grow for me, and it's been a process of realizing that he's constantly breaking me down and building me up, and he's constantly moving me in the direction that he wants my life to go, because I'm here and I'm sober and I pray for his will, and I believe that everything that happens is a result of God's will, because that's what I pray for, and that's you know, I'm here, and so his will happens, and I don't care what it is, I trust God's will, period. I don't care if I die today, if I die tomorrow, if somebody else does, it's okay, because I trust my higher power's will for my life in any situation. If I didn't pass the nursing program, which there was a case, you know, there was a scenario where that might have happened, you know, it was the idea that, you know what, you have something better for me, and you're going to shut a door, and you're going to open another one, and you're going to take me through the processes that you want me to go through, and I trust you. I don't care what it is, I trust you, and I thank you. Thank you for taking the dog. Thank you for giving me the dog for 10 years. Thank you for taking him from me, and thank you for giving him to me for as long as you did, you know. Thanks for taking this house. You know, it's always building. The top of one mountain is always the bottom of the next for me, and it's a constant growth process, you know, and I've figured out that I'm the perfect person for any situation I find myself in. Otherwise, why would I be there? You know? I mean, I think, well, I can't do this. Well, this is too big. Well, this is too much. Well, this is too hard. Well, I'm too scared. Well, I don't know how. Well, I stood up and I show up, and God shows up through me. I have to let God show up through me. Just like tonight, I ask God every time I speak in any situation, especially when it's confrontational, because I got a big mouth. I tell God, you speak through me, you do the work. I want to see this the way you would have me see this. I want to do this the way you would have me do it. And it's worked for me. It's worked for me. It's given me a level of freedom here. I've been free to do anything that I want in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's truly been a blessing. You know, when I first got here, I was completely consumed in self. I was in fear. And one day clean was huge for me. So if you're new, I want you to know that I understand what it's like to be young and scared and not understand this and think that you guys are all just a bunch of wackos and I, you know, really not being thrilled about being here and that this is boring and I'll never have fun another day in my life and, you know, and being just overwhelmed and terrified by this disease and, you know, the idea of a higher power, sponsorship and a fourth step and getting honest and all that stuff. We get it. You know, you're here, you're home, we're all doing this together. You know, we all understand each other on a deep level. We have something very sacred here in a way that not other people can relate to. And it's a blessing. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful process. And, you know, people have loved me until I've learned how to love myself a little bit more. When I got here, I had no self-esteem whatsoever. And today, 10 years later, I've graduated to low self-esteem. Okay? So it's going to continue. You know, we're all with you on that. You know, we all have that bit of good in the worst of us and a bit of bad in the best of us, or, you know what I mean? We all have that streak in us. And you're no different than me, and I'm no different than you. At the end of the day, I'm an alcoholic, and I just want to stay sober one more day, you know. Step 12 literally has kept me sober this year. Step 12, I don't even think about it. I don't want to spend hours on the phone with these women. I don't want to suit up and show up. I don't want to meet with three of them once a week. That's a lot of hours. I do it because it's the magic. It's the magic that happens through the process. It's such a beautiful experience. If you've never had that experience, you have got to check it out. And I do not do it out of virtue. I do it because I know it's the thing that saves my life. I mean, getting on my knees is one thing. Going to a meeting is one thing. But that direct communication with another alcoholic and to see the light in their eyes and to give them a little bit of what people have given me has just been overwhelmingly beautiful. It filled me up. It's the one thing that will get me out of self-pity. It gets me out of anything that has to do with myself. It's a spiritual process. It's been a spiritual process. It's unexplainable. I don't think I should be able to explain those processes to you in a way that I can understand them because they're between me and her and God. And something happens when you're in that room with that woman or that man and you're, you know, one alcoholic helping another. It's a magical process. And if you don't think that you have anything to give, think again. People have put countless hours into me, and most of them have been newcomers. People have given me pearls of wisdom that have kept me sober one more day, and they had 2 days clean, 2 days sober. I mean, that's the deal here. I learn from the newcomer. The newcomer is the most important person in the room. And thank God for you guys, man. Thank God for you guys. You know, this journey for me has been, it's been wonderful. It's been amazing. It's been, you know, I've been able to have successful relationships with other women in my life, friends. I've been able to have jobs, pursue my career, pursue my education. You know, I've struggled just as much as the next guy, but you know what? I keep hanging on. I have a sponsor that has 30 years. We work steps diligently. I have a home group, which is the spiritual connection. I'm teaching Belmont and Fresno at 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights. And I celebrate. And I celebrate every year to show the newcomer that this process works. And I don't believe that there is anybody too stupid for this program. And I don't believe that, you know, that there's nobody out there that can't get this or that can't do this, you know. So, you know, I'm really grateful that you guys have taken this journey with me, that you've taught me. Like I said, everything that I've said up here tonight has come from a brainwashing that you have done on me. Work in the book, literature, you know, my perception has changed since I've been here. I've grown up since I've been here. It's a good way of life. And more importantly, I understand the alternative. I understand that there's nothing out there that I want. I understand that I will never get what I want going back out there, and it doesn't ever get any better. And people come in here and they show me with their eyes, and I don't even have to ask them, that it's no good out there. It's ugly, it's sad, it's dark, and it's painful, and it will always be that. And so as hard as it's been to stay here at times, and as painful as it's been to experience this human condition and all the feelings associated with it, it's better than the alternative. It's been worth it. It's been worth the pain, the blessings and the miracles and the processes and the growth and the love and the joy and the friendship and the laughter that I've been able to experience here in the past 10 years. I would not give up for a drink, period, on any level. You know, I know the truth about my disease, that it's jails, institutions, and death. I know that it is a hopeless disease of mind and body, and that it centers in our mind and it manifests through our body, and I understand that and I know that. And knowing that and understanding that has really, you know, it's kept me here. It's kept me here. I was hopeless when I got here. The other thing I wanted to touch on real quick was that when I first got here, I developed an eating disorder almost immediately. And the reason I share that with you is because 10 years ago when I came into the program, I was on Avenue 264 at the church, and I was listening to a speaker, and she got up, and I was at another Alcoholics Anonymous meeting where I felt like I didn't belong because I was being tortured and controlled by an eating disorder. And I felt hopeless and alone, and I felt like I had no way out. And I sat there and I listened to this Alcoholics Anonymous speaker get up and tell me that when she got sober, she immediately developed an eating disorder. And it struck right through my heart. And it enabled me to feel connected and be able to open up in a way that sprouted the seed for recovery for me. And I was in fear when I was here because of that. And I did not feel like I was sober, because I was acting out in another addiction, and I didn't feel like I had anywhere to turn. So if you're a gambler, if you're a sex addict, if you're a food addict, if you like to shop, welcome. And keep coming back. There is a solution here for everything that you're going through. You know, I've taken this process of the 12 steps in many, many, many different areas of my life. Okay, including alcohol. So with that being said, I thank you so much for having me out, and I hope we all stay sober one more day. I'll keep coming back.